Welcome back to the Jewish Futurism Lab, where we unpack Torah, tech, and tomorrow. I'm your host, Mike Wirth, Jewish futurist, community artist, and design educator, coming to you from Crowntown, Charlotte, North Carolina. Today, I'm sitting down with Noam Liebman, a visionary Israeli filmmaker who uses the camera as a tool to build Jewish futures. Noam is helping reveal our story one clip at a time. We talk about his Jewish journey, his discovering and reconnecting with Jewish communities in Africa, and the power of film to shape Jewish memories. Like they used to say at Blockbuster Video, be kind, rewind. Let's get into it, y'all. Noam Liebman is an award-winning filmmaker, video producer, and owner of Kavanaugh Films, a boutique production company based in Jerusalem and Israel. Noam's work moves between documentaries, promotional videos, and story-driven media, with features on platforms like National Geographic and Thrasher Magazine, my favorite magazine of the 80s and 90s. As an Ole, or Jewish immigrant to Israel, and a creative entrepreneur, he brings a perspective shaped by movement, adaptation, and a strong sense of purpose. In our conversation, we talk about the meteoric rise in his career, how Kavanaugh Films came to be, and what he's learning about storytelling, impact, and creative responsibility. We also get in the ways film can preserve memory, build connection, and explore new ways of seeing Jewish life and the world around it. So without further ado, friends, here's my conversation with Noam Liebman. Noam and I met in person during the Jerusalem Biennale 23-24, which was an amazing experience. I was literally standing in the Heichel Shlomo Center with all these amazing exhibitions opening, one that I was a part of, Jewish on Paper, and up walks Noam next to me, right? And I was just like, whoa. And you know, I think that night I ran out of like the feeling that your body has to make you feel starstruck. And you know, I met so many folks who I admire, and one of them was you, Noam. And he just says, he said hi, and I said, hey dude, you're Kavanaugh Films. And you're like, yeah, I'm Noam, what's up? And I just immediately felt like, oh man, what a cool guy. But I, you know, had become aware of you through the Atid class, through the Vision Movement, and you know, Rav Huda would show us your clips, and you know, Baruch Hashem, you know, we're now here talking about Jewish futures and the way that we envision and want to build the Olam Haba, right, the universe to come. And my bro, the lawnmower just showed up, so hopefully that's not buzzing too hard here on the audio. But
I don't even hear it.
Baruch Hashem, look at that. The microphone is working today. You are born and raised in Minnesota. Is that true?
Yeah,
amazing.
That's right.
And now you create films from Jerusalem, right? With an amazing Jewish family at the center of your life. And you know, how did that journey unfold in your mind as a young Jewish creative, right? And saying like, this is what I want to do and what I want to be when I grow up. And you know, how did you know that like Avodah was a part of your creative being?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that. So I'll tell you that my interest in filmmaking came from my passion for skateboarding. Skateboarding is something I've been doing since I was 7 years old. And growing up with my friends, we would have like a handy cam, you know, tape, and we would always be filming each other skate. So I feel like from a very young age, I knew some of the basics, and I knew that I liked making videos. And then when I was in university, I started to explore that further. There's actually a documentary that I watched, which is called Searching for Sugar Man. Have you ever seen it? Highly recommend it. Oh. Highly recommend it.
Okay. What
essentially
is it?
It's a story about a man who was a musician who was very famous in South Africa, and his music was actually the voice of the political revolution, and he didn't even know it. He did not even know that he was the most famous artist. And so what I realized is that oftentimes the stories in real life are more amazing than the stories that Hollywood can come up with. And I would much rather be connected to real stories, things that actually happened, are happening, and have the ability to change the world. And film is such a powerful format for that because it's educational, causes people to have emotions, and it activates them. So, you know, around when I was in university, I decided I'm gonna make videos, you know, I'm gonna make documentaries. I don't know exactly how I'm gonna do it, but I'm gonna figure it out as I go. And I think because I grew up skateboarding, I had this DIY mindset in that you can just make stuff on your own. You don't need to ask for permission. You don't need to get an opportunity of a specific job or a company. You can just do it on your own. And maybe it won't be very good at first, but little by little, you can develop your skills. So that was really my passion for filmmaking, which I discovered in university. And then not long after did I discover my passion for Israel. You know, I grew up in a Reform Jewish home. A lot of the Jews in Minnesota are Reform. And so I didn't have such a strong interest in Judaism. In fact, I was often the only Jewish kid in the circles that I would hang out in because there weren't so many Jewish kids skateboarding in Minnesota. So I guess I wasn't really interested and I wasn't really too excited about it because it made me different. And I think at a young age, you just want to fit in. So not until I was in university did I even kind of consider my Jewish identity and what that meant to me. I joined the Jewish fraternity on my campus, and that was the first time that I actually had other friends who, you know, knew things about Judaism, and I had this sense of belonging within a community. And shortly after that, I discovered anti-Semitism, and I realized, you know, when you're growing up, even in public school in America, you do learn about the Holocaust, and you learn that there was this dark chapter where Jews were persecuted, but you learn it almost as if it's just in the past. It's not really relevant anymore. You know, we can take some of those lessons. But then in 2016, this was long before October 7th. I guess the short version of the story that I'll tell is that I just saw what was happening on campus and I was confused by it. I was like, how is it that there are so many people who hate Israel and are so emotionally invested in this topic, a part of me feels like it's not right, it's not just. But at that time, I didn't yet have the tools or the knowledge to be able to dive into conversations about the conflict. So the first sparks came from curiosity and a sense of responsibility, because I knew enough of Jewish history to know that nobody came to rescue us during the Holocaust. And when all of these students on campus and protests are coming against us, no one's coming to save us. Like, it's really up to us. And just by the fact that I happen to be born a Jew, I have this responsibility to know more about the history and the war and what's going on. And as I started to learn, you know, I remember the first thing I did was just go on Wikipedia and type in Israel and started reading about the history. And little by little, I realized, whoa, this is an incredible story. This is the story of a broken, scattered people spread around the world, and they have somehow managed to preserve their identity while constantly being persecuted, and not only surviving, but building one of the strongest nations in the world, you know. And we get to live in that chapter of history, the chapter where our ancestors put in the work. They got the Jewish people out of diaspora, you know, built the country, established, and suffered a lot along the way. So I just started to feel more and more that I wanted to be a part of that story. I wanted to be involved, and I wanted to use the skill set that I'd been developing of making videos to contribute to that story.
That's beautiful, man. Wow, what a crazy story. So first question is, all right, I love skateboarding too. And like, I'm so amazed that you found that film. I mean, I'm a little older, so Animal Chin was my, Bones Brigade, Tony Hawk videos from the 80s. Those were my my things. Man, I really wish I had seen this movie. It sounds like it changed your life completely, which was phenomenal. Say the name one more time, Noam.
Yeah, so the documentary is called Searching for Sugar Man. It has an amazing soundtrack. I think you're gonna love it. And what really also stood out to me, I watched it on DVD, and there was a bonus feature behind the scenes, the making of. And the director of this project talks about how he was traveling the world looking for stories to tell which I thought was just a cool concept to search for the best stories to tell. And he discovered this incredible story, this guy who was famous, didn't know he was famous, and everything that unfolded. And eventually he didn't have funding for the project. And so he basically said, I'm just going to do it myself. I'm going to teach myself the skills. I'm going to get it as far as I possibly can on my own. And that mindset of doing it on your own was very inspiring to me. Because I think that we live in this time where we do have access to so many skills and tools and resources. And even if the first camera that I was using was not very good, it was enough to start. And it was enough to begin the creative process, which, you know, I'm still every day learning to improve my craft.
That's so cool. Now, what frat were you in college?
Yeah, it's AE Pi, the Jewish fraternity.
All right, brother. I'm also AE Pi.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, I got pretty involved as well. I was the recruitment chair, and I really wanted our fraternity to kind of be more known and recognized on campus, because it was like nobody knew that we existed. And I think that's that energy is like still fueling me today, which is like we need to better tell our story, represent ourselves, and be strong and confident in who we are in the world.
Yeah, especially in those, you know, pan-Hellenic college spaces, there's a lot of social capital, right, that can be gained in those things. And I think, you know, having bold Jewish presence there is super, super important, for sure. I'm glad that you were doing service, because like ours, we were just dissolving into drinking and and all of those things.
There was plenty of that too.
It's yours. You can't avoid it. Oh, that's great, man. All right. Well, when I see you again, we'll do the secret handshake, the AE Pi handshake. When I was out in UC Irvine at the Jewish Street Art Fest, I was working with the Hillel at UC Irvine, and like 15 AE Pi bros walked in, and it was like, you know, once you realize that, especially after, I don't know, 25 years of being away from it, pretty rad that still exists. So I'm glad that we're in the community together, my friend. That's really awesome. So you and your amazing wife, Bron, you guys talk publicly about, and you use your voices to combat anti-Semitism, right? And really show Jewish pride as a couple. And I think like you obviously visually mean something to the diaspora, right? As much as to the Jewish world in Israel. Right, that you have a mixed race couple there, that like there's still a lot to go in terms of Jewish understanding of skin color and race and things like that, and that like so much of that is put on us by the West, and you know, I want to ask you about how you feel about that and how you guys deal with that, but I also want to ask you too about putting your mind into the future, right? It's 2040. Okay. Like how many years from now is that? 20 something years. And your children are adults in Israel, right? So like, you know, what do you think your work now needs to do to set up a future, right? Where there's normalization and the beauty of your family is like fully expressed and fully appreciated around the world.
Look, the culture in Israel is much different in terms of racial identity. It doesn't, in compared to America, it doesn't have the weight of slavery and the segregation that happened in America. It doesn't mean that everything is perfect and there's no bigotry. That does exist. But I think that because we share the layer of our identity, which is a Jewish identity, that the skin color is much more secondary. And we have something very strong that we can all unite around. So I think that the older generation in Israel was more racist, more shocked by the differences in the different demographics of Jewish people who were coming to the land of Israel from totally different cultures and speaking different languages. But now that we're several generations in, like everybody's used to it, it's the norm. And I know that everyone who serves in the army is surrounded by people from backgrounds that they probably didn't grow up with. So, yeah, I don't know. I just think naturally things are getting better in Israel in terms of if there is still remaining bigotry against people for how they look. And I also think you know, the main project that I've been working on for the past several years now with Rudy about the lost tribes of Israel. So many of the descendants of Israel are also in Africa. And I think as they continue to get recognition and become a more known part of Am Yisrael, all Jews will just understand that the Jewish experience spans the entire globe. It includes every single language, skin color, food, music, it's everything. And that's by design. You know, we contain within this tiny little nation every archetype of the human experience. And so our job is to basically bring them all back together and find out how to live in harmony and build this beautiful society together, taking the best of every single culture and combining it and seeing the beauty of all of humanity.
That's amazing, man. And, you know, I think too, you know, you were talking earlier about college campuses and people who are thinking ill of Israel now and ill of Jews, whether they're active or not, right? I think you guys sitting there together being like absolutely in love, you can feel it, man. It's so awesome. That I think puzzles them. I think it because like you're not showing racism, you're not showing like all the things that colonization, right? Like you're not showing all these terrible libels, right, that are thrown onto the Jewish people in Israel. So, you know, I think it's an incredible thing. Personally, I was adopted when I was born. I was raised Jewish, but I also have Jewish ancestry. It also happens to be through my maternal grandfather, who is Black. So because he's African American, there are all those layers there that you were describing. And because of lack of records and things like that, I'm unable to discover who my Jewish ancestor is, because I have whatever, sorry, this is, I'm going to be all American right now. My DNA test, right? I got it for my birthday. It was cool to find out. I have 14% Ashkenazi Jewish, but then also a whole mixture of African, from South Africa to Western coastal Africa. So there's an amazing story in there. You know what I mean? So like, I'm delighted to hear Noam, you know, you speak this way, that like, and the work that you're doing with the Igbo, is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the several communities that we're covering in our documentary series and that have this strong claim to their ancestral connection in Israel. And not only that, but they're actually observing halachic Judaism on a very high level and in a very serious way. So yeah, it's one of the most incredible stories and kind of similar to the documentary that I mentioned. One of the reasons why Searching for Sugarman is such a great story is because something big is happening and people don't know about it. And that's really the same situation with this ingathering of the exile, these descendants of Israel that have been disconnected for so long and are now being reconnected. And, you know, a lot of people just don't know about it yet. And that information is going to come out and hopefully it's going to bring a lot of excitement and unity and motivation to get involved in being a Jew, being involved in the Jewish story.
Beautiful. And and being involved in a project like that, right? And also having a wife who has African heritage, how has your Jewish life expanded? Like, are there new rituals that you've adopted or integrated? And likewise, you know, backwards, that you feel have mm-hmm. like really expanded your Jewish knowledge? Mm-hmm. Experience.
Well, I would say that I feel like I always had an interest in the story of the Beit Yisrael. And there was something I realized recently that was pretty amazing. My grandmother, she had a lot of books, and I would visit her in her study, and she would always say, you know, if you want to take a book, feel free to take a book. And there's only one time that I ever took a book from her, and it was a book about Ethiopian Jews. And this was like 10 years ago. So I still have this book that just happens to be the one that I took from her. So aside from that, you know, I had been to Ethiopia, visited several different Jewish communities there, learned a lot about the history, read books on it. And so, yeah, I guess I just felt their journey. You know, it was amazing to me. And I would say that, yeah, I never imagined that I would marry an Ethiopian Jewish woman, but like things just worked out in a way that it was like everything flowed so smoothly. So thankfully, you know, I was accepted into their culture, their family. You know, we play the music in our home, we eat Ethiopian food in our home. So we have Ethiopian artwork. So yeah, we definitely integrate the culture into our lifestyle.
Beautiful. Is there anything that is like a favorite of yours that you would say, Mike and audience, try this, right? Or seek this out and you'll be all the better for it. Like a food or any musicians or anything like that that you really love.
I mean, first of all, yes, the food is amazing. Injera is the bread that is the staple of the diet. It comes from teff flour and people in Ethiopia eat it for 3 meals a day. It only grows in Ethiopia and Eritrea. So it's very unique to that world. But I mean, the miraculous part of the Beit Yisrael is not the surface level stuff of the music and the culture. It's the journey and the fact that they were on their own in Ethiopia, preserving a Jewish identity for 2,000 years. And Christians were trying to convert them. You know, they faced so much persecution. The word that we Jews in other parts of the world, when they first started making contact with Beit Yisrael, they called them falasha. That was the word that was known. And you know, now in Israel, most people understand that falasha is actually a derogatory term. It means that you're an other, you're an outsider, you're not from here. And so that is how the other Ethiopians referred to the Ethiopian Jews, as a way to remind them, you're not like us. You know, the same experience, the same pattern of history that Jews experienced in many other times and places around the world, which is, even though you maybe look like us, even though you speak our language, even though you work in jobs, we see you as different. You are other than us. And it's just incredible that they went through that experience. They preserved it. They struggled, you know, to leave Ethiopia, to travel through Sudan. So really just that story has so much inspiration for me and hopefully for the rest of the Jewish people to realize that we can persevere, we can overcome, and there is, you know, a salvation. The fact that they yearned for so long and now here they are living in the land of Israel, like dreams do come true.
Man, Baruch Hashem, what a story. And no doubt, I'm sure there's a film, documentary script brewing in your head about how to tell all these stories, right? Going forward, you know, with the different kind of lanes that you've built for Kavanah Films, right? The different stories and things that you cover, whether you're on campus, and you know, I'm a college professor, so I was very much appreciative of seeing all of you and Rudy walking on college campuses, having conversations, you know, stepping out in front of the camera, and, you know, to really bring out what was emerging. Because I'm with you. Like, I knew things were shifting, but they were new and strange. And I realized that, like, you know, the academic side of things was churning this. You know, that there were people in the faculty that were, you know, effectively culturally extorting people and holding them hostage for strange reasons. You know, like so much of the West is being they're trying to superimpose this lattice of the West onto Israel and Palestine, right? Even before October 7th, you know, I'm recalling even some of the things that I've seen you guys when you went to Berkeley and some of the different UCLA, right? And just standing on campus, that being a public campus, mine's a private campus, so we don't have those things there. But, you know, going into the future, like your films are doing things. What do you see as like I mean, are you just taking it as it comes, like as the world kind of spits the new thing at Jewish people and the world? Or do you kind of hope, like, all right, if we keep pushing this message, right, if we repeat it, do you think that we'll land somewhere? Do you guys have like a goal?
Mm-hmm. Well, the goal is Mashiach. That's the ultimate goal. So every single day, hopefully the work that we do as Jews can bring us one small step closer to that. Now, my perspective on making videos is that I try to make videos that I wish I would have been able to see when I was going through my journey of trying to understand what is Judaism and Israel. That's really my perspective. And I think that I have a unique lens because I grew up in the totally secular atheist worldview. And now I'm surrounded by super religious Jews all the time. So I understand how the secular people think and how the religious people think. And I guess I try to bridge. I try to bring those worlds together and try to see the value and the benefits of both. And so in terms of my work, you know, like I said, the main project I've been working on is this documentary series, which is six episodes, each is 1 hour long. And that the goal of the project is to reconnect these communities to the Jewish people. And we believe that once the project is out there, there will be many initiatives that are created to really forge those connections, whether it's bringing communities to Israel, providing paths to Aliyah, visiting them where they are. There's going to be a lot that unfolds. But through that project, we're also telling the story of who the Jewish people are. You know, we're explaining what is our experience and how do we have a connection to one another, even though we look different and we live in different parts of the world, but we still are connected to each other and to our homeland. And then also to inspire a lot of Jews who are still totally disconnected from who they are. You know, there's so much untapped potential within the Jewish people. There's so many creative, talented people who are just not yet interested or engaged with who they are. And I think that all of the content that I create and that I'm still creating is hopefully going to help people want to be more involved. You know, just like we need more of our people investing their energy, their resources, their creativity into the story of the Jewish people. Like we're a unit, we're one nation. And so we're not going to be able to accomplish everything if we're trying to do it as individuals. And I'll wrap that up by saying, you know, we have this mission of being a light unto the nation. And when we look back at history, we can see that there were individual Jews who really have been a light to the nations. You know, Albert Einstein, the amount that he changed the human understanding of the world. And there's so many Nobel Prize winners and these individuals and these communities, but we really have to channel all of that together into the nation state, into the vessel of the nation state, in order to shine the light bright enough that it impacts the whole world. And so I'm big into encouraging Aliyah. I think Aliyah is one of the main things that our generation should be emphasizing. We built the vessel, and you know, we still have so many more Jews that should be here, can be here, will be here, and hopefully the messaging that I put out there helps people understand Aliyah, the value, the possibility of it, and just that they need to realize this is where the Jewish future is, and they should invest themselves into coming home.
Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. And what do you say, Noam, to the young Jewish filmmaker who's going to hear this and think about all the things we're talking about, right? And like their budding interest of film, you know, what should they be focusing on, you know, as a young person getting into that?
Mm-hmm. Right. So when I came on the name Kavanah, the thought process behind it is that film is this very powerful tool, and mostly it's been used just for entertainment purposes, just to go out and have a good time and kind of disconnect from reality and maybe laugh, maybe get scared. You know, it's meant to just pull you out of reality, but it's such a powerful tool, and it really can be used to connect you to reality more. And so my intention, my kavanah with filmmaking, is to activate people, to inspire, to educate, to get other people to start making the world a better place. And specifically for the Jewish people, my nation, I want them to be involved. And so, You know, filmmaking is this broad tool, but if we can figure out what is our vision, what is our message, and then try to create the high quality content that has entertainment value, but serves a greater cause. So that would be my advice. And that's kind of what I've been aspiring to do for the last decade now.
Amazing. So sounds like we should be, you know, picking up the camera, right? Finding our sugar man, so to speak, that kind of tells us to go out and do it, right? And it sounds like, Noam, you're giving folks permission to do that. And I think that's really important for young creatives to hear, right? Is that like they are creative, their voice matters, right? And what they're going to say is going to be around longer than what we got to say right now, right? You know, in terms of the voice of a generation. So Noam, at the end here, I want to play a little future game with you. I baited you earlier to see if you'd start to think about, like, you know, what the future might feel like, and we'll play a little prediction. So pick a year, right, that you think is like interesting to you as like a potential place to say that like how you feel the future should be would happen, right? So if you think it's like 2099 or something, or, you know, no, we need 300 years to do make the future into something that I feel is like a great society, or perhaps connected to the work that you're doing, right? Right, describe like an ordinary day in the life of those Jewish people, right? Of a Jewish family in that world, right? The world to come, so to speak. You know, what are they worrying about? What are they celebrating? Does film and media and art, you know, play a role? You know, what's happened with that? What do you think? What does that day look like?
Okay, so you want me to propose a year?
Yeah, just pick a year in the future that...
Okay, so let's go with 2050, 24 years out.
Yes.
It's pretty clear that AI is going to have a major influence over our day-to-day lives. And hopefully by then, we will be reaping some of the benefits, which is less need for the physical labor, like that the machines are doing the farming and they're, you know, creating the clothing, and that all the people around the world who are suffering in these very low paying jobs, but it's the only opportunity that they can get, hopefully they're able to grow food and resources using AI on the land. And, you know, because people will have more time, they'll have more time to do the things that they love. And so hopefully it's not going to be wasted on like mindless entertainment and scrolling, which many companies are incentivized to promote, but that there's more meaningful things, like realizing that they're, you know, there's still going to be people suffering even as the poverty level increases around the world. And so hopefully people will just be able to get more education. I think the Zohar talks about that there will be a time where there's universally spoken language. And we can see that English within the past few hundred years, you know, has basically taken over the planet, where if you went back 500 years ago, no one would really be able to communicate with each other because you only spoke the local dialect of where you lived. So hopefully there's like this interconnectedness, and that the whole world is in touch with each other, is improving. And I think that Israel will continue to be a guide when it comes to improving water quality, land quality, air quality, solar technology. I mean, Israel develops the best tech, and they're probably they already are exporting that into the entire world, but I imagine that it'll get to a level where basically the whole world is like relying on the guidance of Israel to help them perfect their systems of societal operation. And yeah, Bezrat Hashem, you know, it's gonna improve the human experience and allow us to give gratitude to the creator of all of this and be more united with each other, to treat each other better. That's really what the creator wants, is to see people getting along and you know, not abusing one another, no more corruption, no more jealousy. And we're slowly going in that direction, but there's setbacks along the way. So we just need to shine our light as Am Yisrael, and also be connected to the rest of the world. You know, we're not supposed to be isolated from the other nations. I heard something interesting recently that was on the Sanhedrin. The rabbis who served needed to be able to speak all of the languages of the world.
Wow.
Yeah. So just this idea that we're not meant to be an isolated Jewish nation on our own, focusing on ourselves. Like, we're really here to serve the world, to serve all the people of the world. And that means understanding and connecting with them.
That's fantastic. Oh, man. Well, dude, thank you for playing the game there. You didn't disappoint. Yeah, no, it's important, right, that we have these kinds of conversations, because what comes out, right, is like our hopes, our fears, our dreams, our wants, right, all the things. And, you know, even thinking beyond our lifetime is important, too. You know, I want Mashiach now, too. I wonder if it doesn't happen in our life, because as it does for, you know, people who are dying right now, right, may they rest in peace. It sounds like we have to invest in long-term tracks to make sure that path comes, right? Because there's so much that will have to happen and things in between that and here, I feel, right? And maybe not for you, but yeah. I mean, I live in the diaspora, you know what I mean? I'm disconnected from like how the life that you are. And, you know, I like many, I yearn for it. But the moment I think about putting myself into the context of like making Aliyah, oh man, there's so much fear there, you know, and there's so much like unknown. And I think that's like that's my kavanah, but my imunah and my bitachon are like, ew, when it gets to that moment. And, you know, that's why I feel like my mission is to like others in the past is to kind of keep a strong voice in the diaspora, you know, to keep the lighthouse on, so to speak. So folks can at least know where we're pointed, you know, what our future is. Cause for some of us, who knows, I don't want it to get worse. I don't wish that, but you know, as Bubby and Zadie used to warn us about the old country, you know, things are scary. People's ideas of normalization have become much more intense than I ever thought they would be, you know? Yeah. Well, Noam, super appreciate the conversation, man. You're a wise dude in your younger years. So mazel tov and b'chatzlacha and all the great things in your life. What's coming out next? What's on the horizon immediately for Kavanah in terms of films and projects?
So right after I get off this call, I'm going to upload a new video where I'm responding to an anti-Semite who was putting out some crazy misinformation about the Jewish people. And yeah, I'm creating different short form social media content meant to show life in Israel, meant to dispel misinformation. I almost see the anti-Semites as like an opportunity for us to clarify what Jews really think and believe. And when we stay silent, you know, their misinformation gets louder and louder. And it's like, come on, Jewish people, speak up. You just have to speak up. You gotta know what we're all about. And we need to always conduct ourselves in a professional, mature way, but do not let all these crazy lies and misinformation just keep going around. We really need to step up to the microphone and just not only speak about it, but just live to the fullest extent who we are and what we're all about.
Amazing, bro. Thank you so much for all the work you've done. You've been an inspiration for so many creatives and just Jewish people in general. So keep on shining your light, bro. It's bright. So thank you.
Thank you, Mike. You as well. I appreciate the call today. Keep it going.
You have been listening to the Jewish Futurism Lab with Mike Wirth, a weekly independent production of Mike Wirth Art, Incorporated. You can connect with the show at jewishfuturismlab.com, and we're on all of your favorite podcast platforms. We'd love for you to subscribe, comment, and leave a review so other seekers can find the show too. New episodes come out Friday mornings, East Coast time. And if you or someone you know is a Jewish futurist doing fascinating work, message me on Instagram. I'm at Mike Wirth, W-I-R-T-H. Until next time, keep imagining, keep questioning, and keep building. I'll see you in the future.